the sports, all the news, Sportsfire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Rico.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Sportsfire. And what a day it was for Sachin Tendulkar. The cricket world watched as the master, the little maestro, walked out to bat in his 200th and final test match. And the way the things are going against the West Indies, this will probably be the last time that he will be batting. The Windies were bundled out for 182 on the first day in Mumbai. The legend then came out to bat in India's innings, and he is there still not out. So anything could still happen tomorrow. Wouldn't it be great if the maestro goes out with 100? India, I'm sure, came to a standstill today. Hello, welcome to the show. A busy show as usual. On Sportsfire tonight, South African hockey goalkeeper Rassie Peterser, one of the good characters from the South African men's hockey team. They are off to Kenya, and I think they leave tomorrow for the Africa Cup, that Africa Cup that was postponed after the terrorist attack in Nairobi not too long ago. Sportsfire rugby analyst Dan Retief is back from Turkey. We'll preview the weekend's game against Scotland. The Boks have made five changes. Bucky's Buerta back in the starting lineup. Cricket analyst and commentator Neil Manthorpe will carry on talking about the tour of Pakistan, where the Proteas are certainly getting the job done. Elri Liebenberg, what a great story this is. A 17-year-old girl from South Africa, a basketball player who has now got a scholarship to go to DePaul University in the United States to play basketball. Wow, big things. And of course, Norm, our off-the-wall analyst. He wasn't around on Monday. I think his head was in a bandage, but hopefully he's okay. Inserts tonight, hopefully Sachin Tendulkar, Brian Abana, Bucky's Buerta, BBC Football, Wider, and Adam Gilchrist, who celebrates his birthday on the 14th of August. Twitter at Joffers, my boy. Facebook, Graham Joffe. The website, sportsfire.co.za. Sportsfire, powered by Rico, South Africa's leading provider of document management solutions.
Daddy, why do you come here?
Because here I can be creative.
Why is that important?
Because that's how we create our document solutions.
Why do you need document solutions?
Because they revolutionize the way people work.
What's revolutionized?
At Rico, we have as many document solutions as a six-year-old has questions. Why? Because when integrated creatively, information and technology drive productivity and profitability. Rico. Imagine. Change.
Joffa's my boy on his soapbox, and you're not going to believe this, but I haven't got a moan tonight. I know it's hard to believe, but I was fortunate enough to play in the Liverpool Legends Golf Day at Houghton on Tuesday, and all I can say is that the players today can certainly learn a lot and take a leaf out of the book from these older Liverpool players. The likes of John Barnes, Bruce Crawbler, John Aldridge, Steve McManaman, Dietmar Hamann, Robbie Fowler, Phil Neal, and all the other players that were there, they made themselves so accessible to the public. They were just incredible ambassadors for this great football club, Liverpool. Unfortunately, I missed the dinner afterwards, but after the golf. But I heard the players got up there, told some of the stories of some of the big games. And then supposedly all the players got up on the stage at the end of the night and sang the Liverpool song, You'll Never Walk Alone. I heard the tears were rolling. Liverpool fans, football fans, South African football fans, it'll be a night that they will never forget. And I just hope that the game between the Liverpool legends and the Chiefs legends in Durban on Saturday is a sellout, because these Liverpool legends deserve nothing less. But it just seems like the marketing for this game has been so poor. I mean, up until day or two ago, I didn't even know that they were actually playing in Durban. Anyway, let's see what happens on Saturday. And who knows, maybe I'll just be back on my soapbox.
This is Sportsfire with Graham Joffe, powered by Rico.
Right, hockey. We haven't chatted hockey for a little while. It feels like it's been a bit of an off-season for the hockey players. That's obviously because the Africa Cup had been postponed because of the atrocities and the terrorist attacks in Nairobi. But the boys and women are off to Kenya, I think, tomorrow. And the men's national team hockey goalkeeper, Rassie Peterser, joins us now on Sportsfire. Rassie, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Joffers. How are you?
Yeah, all good, my boy. We've been trying to track you down for a while because I've always been told you're one of the characters in the team.
Oh, geez, I'm not too sure about that.
Right, Russ, let's Africa Cup of Nations. Am I right? Do you guys leave tomorrow?
Yeah, we're flying out tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Yeah, so everybody is set. A couple of guys coming from Europe, so they will also meet us tomorrow afternoon, probably late this afternoon in Kenya. Yes, and then, we'll get ready to go on Monday.
So the Africa Cup of Nations is now from the 18th to the 23rd of November. I guess this was quite difficult because you guys were preparing for the tournament probably a month ago, and then obviously the terrorist attacks in Nairobi pushed the tournament out.
Yeah, I think we lost a bit of rhythm. Like you said, it feels like it was a bit of off-season because we would have left straight just after our provincial tournament. I think it was 2 weeks after that. Then obviously the tragic happened in Kenya. But I mean, we kept on going. I mean, the European guys that's playing in Europe, their leagues are in full go, so those guys are fit. And then basically what we did, and the guys that's left over in South Africa, we had our regional camps, so the Western Province guys that were twice a week training there, the Gauteng guys that had a region going here, and then obviously the Durban guys. Then basically we had a weekly feedback that we had a gym program and a fitness program that we had a feedback to Charlie. So yeah, we've just been keep on going. So we're just excited getting onto the plane now and obviously go make sure we go get the job done.
The facilities in Kenya, Rassi, I've been to Nairobi quite a few times and I can't remember seeing an AstroTurf on. Have you been to Kenya before?
Yeah, I mean, we played there in 2007. I mean, it's just like you say, you have to expect the unexpected. Because, you know, a lot of people think, you know, we're going to Africa Cup, these countries, we should beat them because we're much higher ranked. But what the people don't realize is, you know, the facilities that you play at is not always the best. You know, you have things like buses are always late, things are not always going your way. And the last time we played in 2007, I think the biggest problem was the surface that we played on. So we had a couple of things that we had adjusted for, especially when it comes to specialized things like the short corners where the drag flickers couldn't really flick. So we had to adjust our corners and things like that. So it makes it a little bit difficult. But I mean, we're all mentally prepared for this and we know what to expect. I mean, we play this cup every 2 years, so we know more or less what needs to be done.
Well, you're the last line of defense as the goalkeeper, and you talk about the bumpy surfaces. So do you put on some extra pads at the back, around the nose, everywhere?
Jeez, I tell you what, Joffers, doesn't matter how many sets of pads or padding you got, they always find that bloody spot where it always clubs you. So I'll always be walking around with bruises. It doesn't matter what kit comes out and how much padding we got. I don't feel that.
You'll love the story about a few years back, quite a few of my mates playing this old Ed social side. And I went to watch them one night, and they were one short. So they said, Joffers, I was in jeans. I said, Joffers, you just go play in goals. So they gave me all the pads and stuff like that. But, boy, I tell you, a goalkeeper is the most frightening thing. The first short corner came, and I turned my back on the ball. And obviously all the padding's in the front. I don't know what I was thinking. But it's actually very intimidating, Rassi. And, you know, I actually take my hat off to the goalkeepers that play, you know, the hockey goalkeepers, because it's a dangerous position.
No, I think we definitely got a screw loose, that's for sure. So, yeah, one day I'll figure it out. I don't know why the hell I'm playing goalkeeper, but, yeah, you know, somebody's got to do the job. But I really enjoy it. So yeah, let's see, mate. Long way to live.
Yeah, and you do a great job as well. This tournament in Nairobi also acts as a 2014 World Cup qualifier. I guess Egypt are going to be your biggest threat at the tournament.
Yes, I mean, you know, Egypt, they pulled out of the original tournament, and then with all the bomb blasts and all that what happened, all of a sudden they were available to come to the tournament again. So we're not too sure what is happening in the last 6 months in Egypt. Has these guys been training properly? Because obviously they've also had some things going on in their country that obviously blocked them to tour and things like that. So we're not too sure what to expect, what kind of Egypt team you expect. But I mean, we just got to worry about ourselves. We know obviously Egypt will always have something up their sleeves. So we've got to make sure whoever we get in the final, maybe Kenya, Ghana or Egypt, we've got to make sure we do the job. So, yes, but I think you're quite right. I mean, the history shows, you know, we always play Egypt in the final. So we just got to make sure that we're ready coming next week, Saturday.
And, Russell, are you guys playing a bit of a different brand of hockey? Obviously, Greg Clark was a coach for quite a few years. Charlie Pereira's taken over. I think he's been in charge for probably nearly a year already. Are you guys playing a different brand of hockey, or has it just been a kind of a momentum that's carried on from Greg Clark's days?
Yeah, I think obviously there's still a lot of players out of the Greg Clark regime, but I think Charlie has brought definitely a new bit of flavour into our game. Charlie was promoting where we're playing a bit more attacking hockey, a bit more fluent hockey. So he's giving the guys a bit of license. It's quite exciting to see. I mean, we're scoring more and more goals if you look at our games these days. So it's obviously working. Charlie's got the motto where he's saying attack the lead. You know, so even if you're 2-0 up or whatnot, he wants us to keep going forward. So that's the way we're thinking on the field these days. And obviously, we're also putting a lot of emphasis on our short corner battery because we've got some top drag flickers, you know, in the South African team, world-class drag flickers. So, I think one or two tweaks that Charlie has brought to the team, but nothing too major.
World hockey's grown in stature with the invent of that Indian Premier League. Have you had an opportunity to be in the draft? Have you played in that Indian Premier League yet?
Yes, I've been lucky to get pulled into the mini auction that's happening actually on the weekend. So we've got to hold thumbs and see what happens in that. But I mean, it's a great concept. I mean, it's based on the cricket IPL. We all know there's not a lot of money in hockey. So, obviously it's a nice carrot for the players and obviously to get recognition to play in those leagues. So we've got a couple of SA guys, Austin Smith, Justin Redross, Lloyd Norris Jones, that's playing in the Hockey India League. So let's hope we can get some more SA players in there for the next season.
And the auction's this weekend?
That's correct, yes. Yeah, so mini auction.
Holding thumbs for you there. Tell us more a little bit about Rassie Peterson, where you grew up. And I remember I looked up, I think you went to somewhere school, Bergsig, is that
that's
right?
Correct. That's correct.
Where is that?
I grew up in the Platteland in Rustenburg, so that's where you can see that some of the boys are abusing me on Twitter saying you're going on an English talk show. Because when I just joined the hockey team, I was the only Afrikaans guy in the team, so I only knew six words. That was yes, no, and make it a double. So there's a kind of bit of abuse where I come from. And then after school, went to varsity in Pretoria, finished my last 2 years at UJ in Joburg. And that's where most of my hockey started at varsity.
Well, I tell you, you almost sound, you're a lot more English than my Afrikaans, I can assure you that. My Afrikaans is Hittemalkak.
Well, you got the most important word there, so you'll be fine.
Might be my last show, but anyway, I'm glad I got it out there. And Rassie, the Rio Olympics, you guys got to London, you guys did exceptionally well. I mean, a couple games could have gone either way. It was a great experience. Qualifying for the Rio Olympics is obviously the big goal.
Yes, of course. I mean, the next goal is obviously now to qualify for World Cup next year, end of May. Then after World Cup, it's obviously going to be a busy year, or say you can say busy 18 months, because then after World Cup is the Commonwealth Games, I think end of July, and World Cup finished mid-June. So the Commonwealth Games, and then we have to start thinking about qualifying for the Olympics. So yes, you think it's still a long way around away, but it's actually just around the corner. So, I mean, we've learned a lot of lessons in London. You know, there were so many games we got so close, but so far, though. So we learned a lot of lessons. And luckily, after London Olympic Games, you know, usually it's always a regime where a lot of players retire. And we've kept most of the pool players. I only think, there was no players that actually retired. So we still had a young team. So obviously, to take that experience into the next Olympics, we'll definitely have a quality team going into that. So let's hold thumbs that the guys can stay together and we can do the job.
When you're not playing hockey, are you a professional hockey player or you also got a part-time job?
Oh, jeez, I wish I was a professional hockey player. No, I run a hockey brand called TK Hockey in South Africa. So
what's it called?
TK Hockey.
TK,
so, yeah. Yeah, so I'm still in hockey. So we sell basically hockey sticks. TK is a hockey brand. So, yeah, so my day-to-day job is basically selling hockey equipment, all of that. And then, obviously, in the evenings, we get back to hockey practice. So life is basically hockey at the moment.
And is there a website where people can find out more about the TK brand, that we can push them in the right direction?
Yes, of course. We've got our Facebook site, TK Hockey South Africa. They're going to go into our Facebook site or our Twitter handle, TK Hockey South Africa. Or we can go to our website, tk-hockey.com.
Okay, beautiful. Quickly, before I let you go, two things I want to ask you. One of the most daunting strikers to face in world hockey, when he's coming towards you, you're going, uh-oh, I've got problems here.
Jeez, you know what? There was a guy from Australia, Mick McCann. He was an absolute nutcase, and this guy used to smash the ball 300 miles an hour from anywhere around the circle. And then there was another Aussie guy, Des Abbott, that also used to smash the guy at Bruiser. So I would say definitely there were some two big Aussies that probably should have probably just missed out on rugby league and joined the hockey guys. So there's a couple of guys. And then there was obviously a couple of SA boys that could really smoke the ball, like Justin Reedos and a couple of other boys.
Your biggest save or most important save you've made in your career to date?
Jeez, Joffers, there's every save is important, but if I think the one that I probably enjoyed the most was in London when we played against Great Britain in front of the Great Britain crowd. We were 2-0 down, or no, we were 1-0 down against GB. We came back, we were 2-1 up, and then they scored a goal, the equaliser, and it actually hit one of our guys' foot. It was actually not a goal. They referred it to TV. You could see it wasn't a goal. They gave the goal. It was 2-2. So that got us a bit cheesed off. And then on the buzzer, they got a short corner. And then Ashley Jackson, their top drag flicker, flicked the ball. And somehow I just got my fingertips to that. So I think that was one of the more sweeter saves, just to save the game, even though it was a draw.
Beautiful. Well, I'll tell you, your English is perfect. So I'm going to try and just say, bye bye, Dunkey, Rassie. For your Tate on op Sportsfire TV. And ek wens jou groot geluk in Kenya, die hele span. En ook met die auction for the Indian Premier League.
Bye, Dunkey. It's a moot
plesier. Bye, Dunkey, Rassie.
Cheers.
And Rassie Peterson, what a great guy. Hockey goalkeeper for the South African men's national hockey team. And let's not forget, again, I think Mug and Bean, their input into men's hockey, and also the private sponsors, all the sponsors that are involved in hockey in South Africa. Big kudos. Good administration, good sport, good guys, good players, and hockey can only go from strength to strength with the more support that they do get from the corporates. While we're talking about some big stuff South African-wise, and young Ilse Hutting, a young tennis star here in South Africa, and I see she's through to the quarterfinals of this ITF event in Egypt. She beat the number 7 seed Ilona Fomina from the Ukraine in 3 sets. So a real nice start to a career for Ilse Hutting. And maybe that's a name to watch out for the future, tennis-wise, Ilse Hutting from South Africa. Before we get to Sportsfire rugby analyst Dan Retief, I just want to take a little listen to the edited recording of Wednesday's Springbok Media Conference in Edinburgh with Bucky Spurta and Brian Abana, courtesy of South African Rugby.
I'm more happy about it than surprised. I said earlier to some people the day when I left for France 2 years ago, I always said to myself every morning when I get up and go to the gym in Toulon, I still want to play in the green and gold, and the opportunity came around. And I'm very, very happy the day when Heineken phoned me. And for me, it's just to serve here in the Springbok team. I'm living now for every week by week, and just giving my best. But very happy to be part of this amazing squad after 2 years. And just the structures and stuff, it's amazing.
Brian, you're smiling there. What's it been like to have Bucky's back in the squad?
As a guy that's been around a while and had the privilege and honor of playing alongside Bucky's for good part of my career. Now going over to Toulon, I think being able to see the presence he still has within the squad is absolutely immense. He came back that first week in Cardiff, and to see guys like Peter Steptoe and Evan Etzebeth, just looking up this this legend for me of the game. Guys like Sia Kolisi and Marcel Kutsia, still calling him Worm. Was pretty special. Bucky's, even at Toulon, I think his presence is something that each and every team values. And to have a guy not only of the physical presence, but the integrity that he has within the Springbok squad is really special.
Dan Retief, what's it like to have Bucky Spurta back in the squad?
Yeah, it took me by surprise, Joffers. I thought he got to an age where they probably wouldn't look at him anymore. But I see they seem really chuffed with his presence. He seems incredibly happy to be back in the Springbok setup. I think he's got to an age where he's willing to pass things on. One of the nicest pictures I saw of coming back from the tour was of him and Evan Etzebeth and Peter Steph de Toy, so that, maybe he has got a role to play. I just don't know whether he's the kind of player that's going to make it all the way to England, Twickenham 2015. He'll be 36 by then, and not too many have played at that age in a Rugby World Cup. For instance, Thorne from New Zealand. Graham Thorne was a New Zealand centre, but their lock Thorne played at that age in a Rugby World Cup. But there was a different situation. He was the enforcer in the pack. They didn't have a lot of locks to go around. To me, it looks as though South Africa's got lots of locks to go around. But he's a stalwart. he's as willing as the day is long. So, you know, hopefully he's playing a very good role. And he has been picked to play against Scotland. I'm sure that the Scots are not too happy with that.
I'm sure. So, Buckies gets a start. And I'm in agreement with you. I didn't think that he'd ever play for the Box again. And, you know, but I guess nothing's impossible with Heineke May. And, I mean, what if the next World Cup we could have a second row with Buckies and Victor Matfield? I mean, that would be just unbelievable.
Yeah, and as a mate of mine said, and Frick de Pre on the bench.
Yeah,
look, he obviously has great faith in those players, that core of the Blue Bulls that were the first South African team to win the Super Rugby, that made his name for him, you know, and he obviously believes those players really understand the method that he wants to impart to the team, you know. Talking of which, the message, you know, so I'm interested that Pat Lambie, who was picked to start at fullback against Wales but had to move to fly off and then didn't do so well, has now been picked to fly half to play at Scotland. You know, I really don't know what they're doing with this youngster. To me, when I watch Patrick Lambie, the Patrick Lambie that I see in the Sharks is a completely different player to the Patrick Lambie I see in the Springboks. You know, in the Sharks, he runs the show. In the Springboks, he seems doubtful. You can almost see the puzzlement on his face as he's thinking, am I doing the right thing here? Is this what I'm meant to be doing in this situation on the field? I looked up some things about Patrick Lambie. As you know, he was Michael Ouse's first Springbok. They waited for very many years to get one. But Patrick Lambie has played 30 test matches, all right. He started only 11 of those. And of those 11, 8 he started at fullback. So he's previously only started at fly-off, you know, a few times. So, you know, I'm just hoping that we see the Patrick Lambie that we saw for the Sharks in the semi-final and the final of the Currie Cup. A player who stands up, who runs the game, who pulls Scotland apart and makes the Springboks look like a team who can play running rugby, you know, because I think he's a great talent.
Yeah. You know what the biggest thing is probably at the Sharks? He knows he's such a talented player. He's got all the confidence. He knows his position's not in jeopardy. He comes into the Box side. If Mornay Steyn's fit, Mornay starts at 10. If Zane Kirshner's fit, he starts at 15. It almost feels like Lambie's, as you say, he's almost like a lost soul at times in that Box side.
Yes, and now Johan Huisman is back in the squad, and so he's being pushed from there as well, you know. So, and, you know, there were times when even Ruan Pienaar was seen as a fly half. They don't quite seem to know what they want to do with him, but I think, and I've heard it said from within the Blue Bull circles, that they believe that he is not adopting the pattern, that he doesn't want to take on board the pattern. And the pattern is very much, it's a very structured process, you know, that at certain parts of the field, in certain positions on the field, you do certain things. And each position, each player does a certain thing, you know. And it's been very successful for Heineke May at Super Rugby level. But we've yet to see it work at Test match level. But all that said, you know, the Springboks are moving the ball a little bit more. You know, and I never knock them for winning Test matches. And I sometimes get the reaction that I'm told I'm negative about the Springboks. And that's not the case at all. What I'm trying to say about the Springboks is I'm sick to death of hearing how good the All Blacks are and hearing the whole world tell us how we should play like the All Blacks and how they dominate the world of rugby and how they light years ahead of us. I want the rest of the world to say we should play like the Springboks do. And I think we should pick the kind of players that can add that level to our game. You know, and then I go cold. I really get shivers down my spine when I see headlines describing the Springboks as approaching impregnability again. You know, I think they're a long way short of impregnable. I really made an effort to watch the PVR of the Welsh test because, as you know, in Turkey we watched it on a very poor connection down in the south of the Mediterranean. And I was sitting at the back of the room because all the young golfers were sitting in front of the room, so I didn't have the best of views. And I really disagree with the dispatches from Cardiff about how well the Springboks played. I didn't think they played particularly well at all. I know that Alain Roland had a big effect on it, but the Springbok line-out wasn't as good as it's been. The scrums were pretty equal against not a side not known as one of the best scrummaging sides in the world. Okay, they struggled at the breakdown. I thought they were once or twice they had luck on their side. For instance, Jacques Ferry might have been called up for being offside when he set up the last try. And it took them a long time to put away a Welsh side that had lost both their centres and their best prop, you know. So I don't agree that the Springboks have got were that dominant. And funny enough, in the post-match interviews, I thought John de Villiers said it best when he said we were iffy. So they will now go into Scotland, Edinburgh. It's always difficult up there. It's always very cold. You know, Scotland are very competitive, but we beat Scotland. You know, they're way below us on the pecking order in Rugby World Cup, and we have to go and beat them. Even though we had a tremendous battle with them in Nelspruit earlier this year, and then we put them away 30-17, you know. And what I'd like to see is this team to go out, and there are quite a few changes being made. But still, man for man, the Springboks are better. And I'd like to see them start and as confidently as they did against the Welsh, to impose that physicality that we have and really put a side away, you know, really play with you know, that you're willing to say, boy, now that was impressive. And in fact, I think the last time we talked about the Springbok team in that sense was when they were coached by Jake White. There were times under Jake White, for instance, when they beat England 36-0 in the Rugby World Cup, where we said, boy, now this team can really play rugby. Yeah. And then also times under Nick Mallett, where they beat the French at the Parc des Princes, and they gave Scotland a hiding at Murrayfield. And that's the standard they've got to aspire to.
Yep, bookies have got the box favoured by 14. Probably the game that everyone's talking about, though. England-New Zealand at Twickenham on Saturday. Dan Carter's 100th Test match. I think it's going to be a goodie. England, I think, could cause a bit of an upset, perhaps.
Yeah, and you know, not forgetting that the last year in the last Test for the All Blacks overseas, they got thumped by England. They really got taken apart. And England played on that particular day like a good Springbok side. They were very physical. They gave the All Blacks no space at all. They climbed into them. They kicked their goals. And when the All Blacks looked again, they were 12-0 down. And that was something the All Blacks hadn't been accustomed to. They had never trailed by that much throughout the whole of 2012. And they became a bit rattled. They started playing catching up rugby. They started taking chances, as they do, because they don't back off. They just keep playing their game. They keep trying to move the ball. It went against them. And they fell even further behind, and they were unable to get out of that game. And England, really, it was their best performance in a long time. And you will recall, we were rather sort of dismissive of the English press, who suddenly had England as favourites to win the Rugby World Cup in 2015. But England will be up for the All Blacks. I think it's true that the myth of the All Blacks, the fact that the All Blacks are unbeatable, that's been taken away now. So England are going to really come at them. I didn't think England were that impressive against Argentina. You know, they got a few players missing, and they're also stuttering along, you know, they're not firing on all cylinders. But the All Blacks, because of Dan Carter's 100th Test match, and because they will be smarting at having lost to Twickenham last year, I think they're going to come at England with everything that they've got, because they will view this as the big test of this tour, you know, so they'll throw everything into it. And if the All Blacks play well, I can't see England beating them.
Finally, Varsity Cup, I see today, they're going to be experimenting next season with two refs on the field. I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah, it tends to clutter the field a bit, and it's not unique, and it's not a first. It's been done before. Danny Craven, years ago at Stellenbosch, felt that the way to clean up the game was to have two refs. In other words, you could watch both sides of a scrum, you could watch both sides of a ruck and maul, you can watch the other side of the line out, you know, you can really see who's doing what. Because they felt the game was already then, you know, when Doc Craven was alive, and that was in the late 80s, that the game was becoming too fast and it was too difficult to see everything, you know. So he had an experiment. He tried two referees, and it failed spectacularly. And I'll tell you why. Because out at Kutzenberg, where the Marties play, there was a game, and the referees were Wynand Munster, the former Springbok centre who became a very good referee, and Freek Burger, who was then South Africa's number one referee. So they gave the game and the two referees, the experiment, to the two top referees in the country. And as luck would have it, the Argus the following day had a beautiful picture of both referees giving a penalty, but they were giving it in opposite directions.
Beautiful story.
So they had their backs to each other giving the opposition the penalty, you know, and that obviously happens. But, you know, I think there is some merit in it, because we're tired of complaining about mistakes, we're tired of complaining about things go wrong. And there are a lot of things wrong with the law. I mean, we could spend the whole show of Sportsfire now talking about
next
what's
week.
Wrong with the law. But so let's see if it works. And that is why Varsity Cup has been so fantastic. It not only has found a slot on Monday nights. It's not only exciting rugby. It not only brings through players who might not otherwise have a chance. But they experiment things like the white card and the card that can be revisited later. And now, you know, if two referees is the answer, we are going to have a look at it at a much lower level, and we might see whether it works or not. So I'm all for it.
Dan Retief, Sportsfire rugby analyst. Danny, we'll catch up again Monday.
Yeah, look forward to that.
Cheers, boy.
Cheers.
I'm Kath Leahy. With the transfer window firmly shut, the press here in Britain are continuing to speculate about who may or may not be on the move when it opens again in the new year. Here's just a flavour of one or two making the headlines. The Manchester United boss David Moyes is said to be considering a bid for the midfielder Andres Iniesta after hearing the Spain international has fallen out with his Barcelona bosses. The USA skipper Clint Dempsey is set to make a loan return, it's been reported, to the Premier League from the Seattle Sounders in January. Tottenham have first refusal on the midfielder, but Fulham, Aston Villa and Everton are also said to be interested. AC Milan have turned to Newcastle fullback David Santon as the man they want to replace Ignacio Abate, who's been linked with a move to Arsenal. The former Manchester United captain Roy Keane, who of course is the new assistant manager of the Republic of Ireland, has been speaking to the press for the first time since taking the job. Keane is confident he can improve the players in the team, particularly the midfield. He comes with something of a fiery reputation, but he did admit there are different ways of getting the most out of his new charges.
No, I think there's nothing to tame, you know, some sort of animal, you know what I mean? I'm a footballing man, I like to work hard and push people, and sometimes I suppose I have got that slightly wrong on one or two occasions over the years, but generally speaking I look back and I think I got a lot of it right. There's areas I need to look at, particularly as I said, I'm the assistant to when to step back.
That's Roy Keane. For more football news from the BBC, use your mobile phone. Just go to bbc.com/mobile. Don't forget to bookmark it. That's your BBC Premier League update. More tomorrow.
N, I've just got wind of an imminent security breach.
Don't worry, I've already destroyed Document Y.
You did what?
Relax, Bo. I first converted it into digital format with Document Manager NX.
Great. Now everyone has access to it.
I saved it as a password-protected PDF. And I'm tracking any activity on it.
Darn it. With document management that good, I'll soon be out of a job.
You want to know my secret? A secure document solution from Ricoh. I'll even give you the password. Ricoh.co.za. Ricoh. Imagine. Change.
Spoke about it earlier, but India probably coming to a standstill today as the maestro, the legend, Sachin Tendulkar, probably walked out for what will be his last innings in Test cricket, his 200th and final Test match. He's 38, no doubt, and probably wouldn't it be great if he goes out with a nice big 100 tomorrow. Neil Manthorpe, hello, Manners.
Hello, Joffers.
Good, my boy. Did you perhaps see Sachin walking out there today? I actually missed it. I forgot about it. Good journo I am.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? You know what, I think there's just maybe a little bit of overload for some people. I mean, it's just such a massive, enormous event. And I satisfied myself because rather like the players who've decided that they can't play all three formats of the game, I too have decided that journalists and commentators should also prioritise where their you know, the real commitment lies. And so I have to be honest, I have decided that T20s will now be covered from home. And so I've left the UAE, and in fact, I'm back home in Cape Town, and I satisfied myself today with playing a round of golf against a man who got to know Sachin very, very well, Gary Kirsten. And so we were exchanging Sachin stories with Eric Simons as well, who also was bowling coach when Gary was coach of India. So between those two, I satisfied myself talking about Sachin and listening to Sachin's stories while he was walking out to bat and making those 38. But I have subsequently caught up with all the action. But as I said, it's almost kind of too big, really. I mean, I think I'll just enjoy looking back on it in a few weeks' time and taking it all in rather than trying to be involved in it on the day.
Yeah, and come Monday, I mean, we'll take a good look back at the Test match, and then, you know, and obviously then all the praise for Tendulkar, and hopefully he gets 100 to end off this incredible career of his. And, I mean, Gary, I'm assuming Gary just only has praise for Sachin Tendulkar.
Absolutely. Yes, I mean, he's, you know, Gary's a real people person. So I remember very, very clearly spending quite a bit of time with Gary before he went over to India to take over the coaching position. And I remember saying to him the one day, so how are you going to teach him to play the cover drive? And he said, I'm not. I leave the cricket to him. and I'll throw lots of balls to him, and I'll work with him, and we'll talk. And he's a people person, and you know, he Gary just said he is a man of massive, possibly unrivaled humility and humanity, and in a game which lends itself to enormous selfishness. So, yeah, you could say Gary Kirsten's a bit of a fan. I said to him, "Why aren't you there? So were you invited?" He said, the Wankhede Stadium in Mumbai holds about 45,000. And if everyone who thought that they deserved to be invited to watch his last Test match, they would need 1,045,000. But he did say that there were sort of, obviously there were, you know, a dozen functions before the Test and probably, you know, dozens more afterwards to honour Tendulkar. And he did say that I was invited to a couple of them by his wife.
Oh, that's beautiful. Now, I mean, if Gary Kirsten should have been in India, it should have been when we're having this impasse between the BCCI and CSA. That's when Gary really would have been of great value to us, because at least they respect him. I mean, he's one of the most respected guys over there, and maybe he could have actually helped solve the impasse. But that's water under the bridge. Just quickly, before I get back to the Proteus Tour, so you played golf with the Gary Kirsten and Eric Simons today. Did you get any scoop or any dirt that you can share with us?
I tell you what, Eric and I, Gary's one of Gary's favourite partners is Roger Prideaux, who's 74 years old now and can shoot his score on the golf course. And Eric and I got cleaned up, so it was very nice to get revenge against them today. But it was interesting talking about Gary in his role as consultant batting coach now, and just the way that you know, you as head coach, you sometimes, often are too close to the action. It's funny. He said he found it sometimes quite difficult to spend as much time interacting on a one-on-one basis with the batsman that he really wanted to. And he's very, very optimistic. He just loved, being able to go in as a consultant. And there's no acrimony whatsoever between, I mean, in fact, the opposite of any acrimony between him and Russell Domingo. You have to remember that those two have a coaching relationship that goes back 8 years. So he thinks it can really, really work, not on a long-term basis, but, you know, certainly over the next sort of couple of years working as a consultant. And he loved it. I mean, you know, I said to him, funny how they were bowled out for 180 and 140 in the first two games. You then pitch up, and they make 260. And he said, coincidence. Absolute coincidence.
That's the modesty of the man. What a great guy. Okay, so we clean up in the ODI series in the end. Good start to the T20. This is the same Pakistan squad that's coming to South Africa to fill a gap. I mean, they are, I don't know. I mean, we're playing good cricket, and credit where credit's due, but this Pakistan team are just, I don't know. I think they're woeful.
They're rabble, aren't they, at the moment? And that's when they're at their most dangerous.
Sure.
I know you've heard it so many times before, Joffers. You know, the portents are not good. I mean, it's hard being on tour, and I know that people have been telling me for 20 years, oh yeah, sure, how hard is it, you know, you go stay in nice hotels, that kind of thing. But remember that the Pakistan team are on tour the whole time. They don't play at home, they're always on tour. Even when they're in Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Sharjah now, they're still living out of a suitcase in a hotel, and they've obviously fallen out with the coach, Dav Watmore, and they just lack direction in the one-day series. They lacked a plan. They lack cohesion. They don't lack skill, but it just takes something to fire their imagination and to get them working in the same direction. But yeah, I mean, it was dreadful to see them 98-9 in 20 overs in the first T20 was pretty dismal, to be honest. They need to regroup and come over to South Africa and show some fight. But you know, I'm not a betting man, and certainly not on cricket. But if I was, or if anybody asked me for advice, I would suggest that they didn't put much money on Pakistan when they arrive over here.
Yeah, I just don't understand why Pakistan don't get a Pakistani coach. You know, we look at the tragedy with Bob Woolmer, we look at Dav Watmore. I can't remember who was before Dav Watmore, but they just get a Pakistani former great that the guys will respect and can speak the language and understands the Pakistani culture better.
Yeah, but it hasn't worked. I mean, that's the problem. There's so much, I don't know, jealousy and resentment and, I don't know, tribalism and that kind of thing has been explained to me. Jeff Lawson was the man you think of, the Australian fast bowler. He took over after
that's
Bob's
right.
tragic demise. And I mean, it's a strange one. It's the same with Sri Lanka. They seem determined not to employ a Sri Lankan coach as well. And India, you know, they went the route of John Wright and Gary Kirsten and Duncan Fletcher. And it just seems that there's so much factionalism within the Asian countries that that it just seems to me, it's been explained to me by Indians and Pakistanis, that if you employ anybody, you automatically divide the team into those who are part of the same tribe or faction or culture or city. And there's same with the West Indies, you know, the Islanders. The last man, the last captain to really unite that team was Clive Lloyd in the 1970s. So that's why it's the easy option to go for a neutral foreigner.
Momentum One Day Cup. Titans have peaked at the right time. I think they won four in a row to get to the final. They play the Cobras in Cape Town tomorrow night. It's been a good competition. Nice to see Hano Kun getting some runs again.
It's been a terrific competition, really, really well run, well organized, competitive, new names as well, not the same old faces. Congratulations to Momentum and to Cricket South Africa after last year's nondescript, what do they call it, the One Day Cup, the CSA One Day Cup, it has been. Unfortunately, the weather forecast is terrible for Cape Town tomorrow. So, 80% chance of rain, but it has been terrific to watch it, to follow it and watch it whenever possible. But it's the beginning of hopefully better days ahead for Cricket South Africa. I haven't been shy to criticise them, and they know that. Everyone else knows that. But you know, it's time to actually say. Changes have been made, a different approach has been adopted, and really good corporate governance is now at the absolute heart of what Cricket South Africa are doing. And, you know, people say, well, why did they appoint Haroon Loggat? Well, they appointed an independent company to find a shortlist of the best possible CEOs. They did that. Haroon Loggat was way ahead of any other candidate, and it would have been against their fiduciary responsibilities not to appoint him. So, you know, you and I share the same passion about good corporate governance, Joffers, and they might not be getting everything right, and they might still be getting a few things wrong, but at least Cricket South Africa have said, you know what, there's a book out there, and we're going to follow the rules and do everything by the book.
Good. Speaking of books, how's your voucher book selling? Is it platinum yet?
it's been on the shelves for a week. The initial feedback's been good. Have you seen a copy yet?
I'm going to be honest with you now, Manners, and don't take it personally. The last book I read was The Hardy Boys.
Well, you know what? I've got a great theory about cricket books and sports books, and I've written six or seven now, and I reckon that any chapter that's longer than a 20-minute read, you're going to lose people's concentration span. So it's lots of good short snippets and good fun reads. You don't have to kind of sit down. And it's certainly not one of those, and then I ran the ball down to third man and we ran a quick single. It's got none of that sort of stuff in it. It's a lot of good light-hearted and good amusing reading.
Now, I'll tell a mate of mine that actually has. I played golf with him yesterday. He loves it. He said the book is unbelievable. So compliments to you, my boy.
Love it. Thanks, Joffrey.
Okay, Neil Manthorpe, welcome back home, boy, and look forward to catching up again soon.
We'll speak next week.
Cheers and manners.
Cheers.
Cheers. And I meant to actually ask him about that, and I see Callis is going to end his ODI exile, will be available for the Pakistan ODI series. Well, that's not good news for Pakistan, because they're taking a pounding as it is. Joburg is the venue for a four-day conference, World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, having their big international doping conference in Joburg. And I was listening to about the head of WADA, and he said doping in sport remains an issue, as we've seen in the Lance Armstrong case. They have made great strides in their ability to catch the cheaters, and still that they're convinced that there are many more athletes using doping than they're actually being caught. And this is John Fahey.
One of the good things that I believe will come out of the revised code is that there will be that emphasis given to investigation, and it will be clearly written into the code, and it will also give WADA the power to investigate as and where an investigation is warranted. Not that we may necessarily do that ourselves, but we have the power to arrange for it to be done, and at the moment we rely upon goodwill.
Yeah, and I certainly believe there's going to be a lot more urine sample testing and really to get stuck in. And because up until now, really, the doctors and pharmacies, I think, have always been one step ahead of the anti-doping agency. And as we always say, well, we've said over the years with the Tour de France that the best pharmacy wins the Tour de France. Amazing story. 17-year-old South African basketball player Elrie Liebenberg has got an offer for a 4-year full scholarship DePaul University, and let me tell you, DePaul University is one of the top Division I NCAA schools in the United States, in Chicago, a private university in the U.S., and one of South Africa's young, bright basketball stars is on her way to the U.S. Elrie Liebenberg joins us now on Sports Fire tonight. Elrie, how are you?
Hi, Graham. I'm good, and you?
Yeah, great. Wow, you must be, the excitement must be incredible.
Yes, it's big. I can't believe it myself.
I mean, you've gone from being a netball star to a basketball star. First of all, congratulations. I mean, for a South African to get a basketball scholarship in the United States is something quite rare, and I think you should be very proud of yourself.
Yes, I'm very proud of myself and everyone that put me through it, you know.
So many people have probably been involved, from your coaches to your school, and I guess your family, the commitment when it comes to school sport, I'm sure your parents have played a big role as well.
Yes, my parents, because it is not a school sport of the school I attend, they have to drive me 30 minutes drive every day to get to the courts.
Wow. And what school are you at the moment?
I'm attending at Bashuk Academy.
And which is where?
It is based in Rustenburg, Northwest.
Okay, and so that's how you got to play with the Royal Buffer King Academy, and because they're obviously very involved with the basketball at Royal Buffer King.
Yes, that is correct. I played for the special team. That is a team that all the different schools that doesn't have basketball as a sport come together and play in one team.
You're 17 years of age. How tall are you?
I am 2 meters on the dot.
Wow. You are going to be a star in Chicago. And let me just tell you, they've got very good chicken wings in Chicago. You're going to love that.
Oh, yes. I've been there for 2 days, and the food is just amazing there.
Just don't get hooked like I did. You'll come back a lot heavier.
Oh, yeah.
So, and you know, having played netball, what made you change to basketball?
It's not actually what. It's a who. Coach Frank Trahori, that works for the NBA, he spotted me in our local mall, Waterfall Mall. And from there, it just went uphill. I finished my netball career playing for the under-17 Northwest team going to the SA Championships this year. So I finished it on a high level and then just started playing basketball.
And what position do you play?
I play center or forward. Because of the women, we don't actually have centers because you don't get very tall women. So it's more a forward than a center.
Okay. And then I take it you've been watching the NBA and WNBA over the years. And who's your favorite player or team in the NBA?
The team overall is Chicago Bulls, because I'm going to Chicago. So that's going to be it's a highlight of my life. And the best player is LeBron James. Not because only he plays that good, it's because he has the nickname King James, and they didn't give it to him for what he achieved, but that he is the chosen, that they think he is the chosen one.
Beautiful. Sorry, we're losing your line a little bit there, Elrie. And then your dream would obviously be to play in the WNBA after college.
Yes, that is my biggest dream in basketball, because most of the people here in South Africa don't believe me, and even my friends, they don't believe me that I'm going to Chicago, I'm going to the States. So just to reach the highest level of basketball that you can go and just achieve the WNBA, but coming back and that I've built my unique name in the WNBA and coming back and giving what I received.
I can just imagine when you're telling your friends you're going to DePaul University, and they're probably going, where's that? Where's that? Is that somewhere near Rustenburg somewhere?
Yeah, a lot of them, they didn't even know where Chicago is based in the United States because the United States is so big.
No, incredible. Well, I tell you, I've spent some time in Chicago, and you're going to just love it. And I know you're going to be highly successful. The Americans love South Africans because of the work ethic, and what you've achieved already is just phenomenal. And Ellery, we just want to wish you all the best in the United States, and we look forward to seeing you on the big screens playing in the WNBA sometime, and maybe carrying DePaul University to whatever. I don't know if they have March Madness amongst the women, but certainly you're going to be a top player.
Thank you so much. And just the thing that I most, that blows my mind, is that I can reach a WNBA, and where I'm standing now, I've only played 15 months basketball.
Yeah, it just is an amazing story. You certainly are an inspiration, and hopefully a lot of young girls out there are listening, because if you've only been playing for 15 months and you're already on your way to DePaul, it is a sensational achievement. Well done again.
Thank you so much, Graham, and thank you for the opportunity.
No, thank you, and travel safely. Ellery Liebenberg, there we go, a 17-year-old young girl, modest, credible athlete, and let's follow the progress and how she does in the United States. Celebrity birthdays, 14th of November, the French cyclist Bernard Hinault, Jean-Alain Boumsong, the French footballer, Thomas Vermaelen, the Belgian footballer, Jake Livermore, English footballer, Adam Gilchrist, Australian wicketkeeper, certainly one of my favourite cricketers, born this day in 1971. And Infinity Cricket caught up with Adam Gilchrist during the official media launch of the 2015 World Cup at an event in Melbourne a few months ago.
Thanks for joining us today, Gilly. Obviously, with the Cricket World Cup now launched for 2015, how do you think it's going to be different than the other World Cups?
It's an open corner. I'm not sure that, 18 months out, there's any standout favourite. Obviously, India, defending champions, will be keen to take that title again. But the conditions out here are pretty open and even for all countries. So I think that's probably the most intriguing part, is just not quite knowing that there is any one standout favourite.
What could you recall as your
favourite World Cup moment? Probably 1999 World Cup semi-final against South Africa at Edgbaston, and Damien Fleming underarming a ball down to my end to try and run out Alan Donald, and ended up in a tie with South Africa, which got us through to the final. So that's an iconic moment, I guess, in the history of the limited overs game, and one that I was thrilled to be a part of.
Yeah, beautiful. I see the third test coming up at Old Trafford starting on Thursday. How do you think Australia will shape out?
Yeah, not great audio then. After hearing about that iconic moment, I don't think we need to hear any more about Alan Donald being run out. It still makes us South Africans still a bit nauseous. But Damien Martin underarming to Adam Gilchrist to run out Alan Donald. Okay, enough of that. Thanks, Gilly, but happy birthday anyhow. Right, best on the TV for the last part of the week. Friday, Pakistan, South Africa, the second T20. India, West Indies at second test. All eyes on Tendulkar as he resumes tomorrow on 38 not out. Momentum one-day cup final in Cape Town, Cobras, Titans. As Neil Manthorpe said, the weather doesn't look too good. Hopefully it does hold out. Golf, you've got the World Tour champs in Dubai, and I'll give you a leaderboard. In Dubai, Alejandro Canizares, 6 under par, and currently holds a one-shot lead over a group of players. Henrik Stenson is 2 shots back for 4 under par. Justin Rose is 2 under par. Richard Sterney, best of the South Africans, he's at 2 under par. And a little bit further down the leaderboard, Louis Oosthuizen, +1, a 73. George Coetzee, 74 at +2. Thomas Aitken, +4. Garth Mulroy, a 76. Looking ahead also to Friday, South Africa against Swaziland, Bafana Bafana in a friendly. Davis Cup final, Serbia against the Czech Republic. Saturday, you've got World Golf Championship, you've got rugby, quite a few internationals. Italy against Fiji, England against New Zealand, Wales against Argentina, France against Tonga, Ireland against Australia, FIFA World Cup qualifiers, and the game on Saturday in Durban, we spoke about it earlier, the Chiefs legends taking on the Liverpool legends that are in South Africa. Sunday, the Boks against Scotland, it's a 5 p.m. kickoff South African time, the final round in Dubai Golf, you've got World Cup qualifiers, and you also have the U.S. Formula One Grand Prix. Hopefully we're going to track down Norm. I know that he's relocated to another part of the country. Where obviously they don't have telephones, maybe cell phones. I'm not quite sure why we're having trouble getting hold of Norm. Not the first time. So what we might have to do is we'll find a song. Otherwise, Joffers will have to kill time for 5 minutes. I don't know what I'm going to talk about then. But let me just see if there's any other big news that's been happening today. Our swimmers, by the way. Top marks again. Chad Leclos. What did he do? Gold medal count, 24. That's two more first place victories at the Short Course World Cup in Beijing. I think Roland Schumann picked up another medal somewhere along the way. So South African swimmers still getting the job done, despite the poor administration that we have for swimming in this country. And I think this weekend is the South African Sports Awards, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't got my invite, surprisingly. Haven't held my breath, but they're going to be spending $65 million. And you know what makes me even more cross is they were talking about how they were going to save money on the awards and they were going to make it into a lunchtime affair at Sun City so that maybe a lot of the people wouldn't have to stay overnight. And when I'm looking at the times now, it's like 5:30 for 6:30. And can you imagine the gravy train that's going to be staying at the Palace and Sun City this weekend? 65 million rand spent on one night. Can you imagine what that money could do for South African sport, for development, for helping people, giving them an opportunity to go overseas, whether it be young golfers, young fencers, whatever it is. It still makes me sick to the core. And now you have SASCOG, who are ready to dissolve SASCOG as the non-profit company and turn it into an association. I don't get it. I just really don't get it whatsoever. But anyway, I think we may have tracked down Norm wherever he is at some new caravan park somewhere across the country. We've got a couple minutes, so let's see what he's got to tell us. Normie, sorry boy, we've only got a couple minutes for you. What's news?
How's it going?
How are you feeling?
You're lekker, man, lekker. Listen, I'm up here in the northern KZN.
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, it's okay, you know, there's no K or Z in it, but Natal's, yeah. And you know what the weird thing is, eh? You know why I'm glad I'm not with O's from a pork?
Why's that?
Because they got a lot of sugar cane. And I've got lots of friends that are alcoholics, but they got diabetes. That must be a huge conundrum for them, hey? And you know what, Graham, I've changed my rugby team.
You've changed your rugby team?
I changed my rugby team.
To what?
Because I went spearfishing and I couldn't catch any spears. So what I decided to do was get fish. And then when you catch a fish, then the sharks eat them. You know what I mean? I support them all season and then they eat my food. That's cannibalism.
Are you now feeding yourself by catching fish?
I am. You know, the weird thing is I always thought that they put those big fish tanks in a fish restaurant as like a boys' town for dysfunctional fish. Like they can check, hey, if that's... But you know what the weird thing is, Graham?
What's that?
They say that fish is brain food.
Yeah.
But now if a fish is eating a fish all the time, how come they can only remember 3 seconds? I'm asking. I'm just, you know, because there's no sports up here, Graham.
Nothing.
It's quiet, eh?
You know, Durban can be quite quiet.
You know what? Although I've heard crickets, that didn't help. Not much of a sport.
Are you training for comrades?
No, there's been a lot of comrades that have helped me out. And then I saw a Tubby Reddy.
You saw Tubby Reddy?
Yeah.
When?
Well, I don't know, it was like a little beetle that's collecting a whole bunch of cock and rolling it together and trying to sell it to people.
Oh, Normie, my boy. Unfortunately, boy, we've run out of time.
Okay, Graham, I love you, but listen, I'm up here and I miss you, Oaks, hey?
Yeah, we miss you too, my boy. Keep your phone on.
It was.
No problem.
I think it's Tora. I think you should the docker pay.
She's a volunteer as it is.
Well, she's English. We can't blame her. Don't know if they want to open or close the roof. You know, it's weird.
Bye-bye, Normie.
Okay,
good luck,
Graham.
Good
okay,
night.
Bye.
That's it from Sportsfire, from all the team. Good night.
All the sports, all the news, Sportsfire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Ricoh.